Hi, this is Tom from The Happiness Quotient. Thank you for clicking on this episode. If you've chosen to listen to some of my first episodes, 60 or so, they were created before I changed the name to The Happiness Quotient. Don't be confused if you hear my voice welcoming you to Baker Street with Tom Pollard, or if you hear me referencing my YouTube channel, Everest Mystery, you're still in the right place. Until I'm a big star and can hire an editor and producer to change every episode to reflect the platform, my gut tells me you'll be okay with hearing Baker Street or Everest Mystery when you click on an episode to The Happiness Quotient. It's all me. So let's just consider us one big happy family where we all learn together, brought here by our common interests and our desire to create a better world, one episode at a time. I love you. Thank you. Now to the episode. The mountaineering world was turned on its head on May 1st, 1999, on the day that the remains of George Mallory was discovered at 26,750 feet, or about 8,153 meters, in the vast north face of Mount Everest. At shortly after 5 a.m. on that day, a team of six departed Camp 5, the second to last of six camps established on the mountain, using the same camp system as the 1924 British expedition that they were retracing the steps of. As it would turn out, because of an oxygen tank malfunction, only five would continue upward into the search area on the north face. That sixth person, who was filming the other five as they disappeared into the vastitude of the north face, turned out to be me. Conrad Anker moved outside of a search area which had been carefully drawn up in an eight-page search manual created by Everest historian Jochen Hemleb. And then sometime before noon, Conrad, who was below and off to the side of that search area, which would equal about 10 or 12 football fields in size, Conrad discovered the remains of none other than George Lee Mallory, 75 years after his disappearance. He was laying face down with his arms up above his head and his clothes disintegrated at the touch after having spent 75 years in the sun and in the elements, sometimes covered by snow. And when one touched them, they would disintegrate. In fact, when Dave Hahn took that iconic picture of George Mallory's upper torso, his entire back was exposed, having turned what Conrad Anker described as alabaster in color. At the time, the team assumed that the remains were those of Andrew Sandy Irvin, George Mallory's 22-year-old climbing partner on the day that they disappeared, because tufts of yellow hair extended out from a leather climbing helmet that he was wearing. But shortly after that, upon further examination, someone noticed that on one of the labels inside of the shirt of the body,
this is George Mallory.
It said G. Mallory. George Mallory. This was George Mallory and not Sandy Irvin, to the shock and utter surprise of those who were there. When the news got out about the discovery of George Mallory, it set the mountaineering world on fire, and in days it was on the cover of the New York Times. There was a photograph of Conrad Anker beside a photograph of George Mallory. Indeed, Conrad Anker was now world known as the man who discovered George Mallory. Today, I'm going to share a bit about my experience on the 1999 Mallory and Irvin research expedition, including a clip from a presentation I did in Sydney, Australia in 2019 for the Explorers Club chapter there. Before we get into the heart of it, make sure you take a moment to subscribe if you haven't done so already, and also consider becoming a member of this channel. You can support the work that I do on Everest Mystery so I can put out more videos like this. These videos I look to inspire and give you thought-provoking videos that make your life just a little bit better. And also, make sure you let us know in the comments what your thoughts are. Did Mallory and Irvin make it to the summit of Mount Everest on 8th of June, 1924? There's usually some really interesting conversations in the comment section, so why don't you jump in there and let us know what you think. So let's pick up my presentation in Sydney, Australia, where I'm talking about May 16th of 1999, when Andy Politz and I went back to the site of George Mallory. We were intending originally to go on a search for Sandy Irvin. However, on May 8th, there was a storm and a lot of snow was deposited on the mountain. And therefore, we decided to go back to the site of Mallory because we knew we could find that. And Andy carried with him a metal detector. So along with four others, Conrad Anker, Dave Hahn, Jake Norton, and Tap Richards, up we went all the way to Camp 6 at 27,200 feet, the highest camp on the planet, or 8,290 meters. Before we went to the body, Andy and I decided we would spread out as far as possible and do some searching for Sandy or any other potential artifacts, maybe an oxygen bottle that we might see along the way. And what I did was I went as far west as I possibly could toward the Great Couloir, somewhere under the Norton Couloir, where Teddy Norton and Howard Somerville had gone back in 1924 in early June before Mallory and Irvin's fateful attempt on the summit. Looking down the Great Couloir to the bottom of Mount Everest sent chills up and down my spine, seeing the amazing distance between me and the Rongbuk Glacier at the bottom of the North Face. So we are going to jump to the section of my presentation in Sydney when I'm explaining George Mallory and his passion for Mount Everest, his love of all things Everest, and how it possessed him to become the first man to stand on the summit of Mount Everest. Public Broadcasting noticed me, and that's how I had an opportunity to get to know this gentleman here who passed in 1924. This is George Lee Mallory, a man who was singularly obsessed with summiting Mount Everest. Many people up until that point in the 1920s, most of the people in the world really believed that you would die. No matter what, you would die if you tried to go to the top of the mountain. That guy was the one who said, nope, I am going to prove that we can do this. So here's this guy with three children, little kids at home, and then in 1924, he gets back for his third expedition. This is gonna be it. This is the last known photograph of George Mallory and Sandy Irvin, and this is the North Col. And on June 8th, Noel Odell, one of the climbing partners of this team, looks up onto the ridge on the day that they were going to attempt the summit, and he notices two small figures climbing up above 8,500 meters headed toward the summit. That was by far the highest any human being had ever been on a mountain before, and they were going for the top. And then, a moment later, clouds came in and obscured any view of these two figures moving upward. And that was it. They disappeared. 75 years, his children grow up wondering what happened. What did my dad do? Did he make it to the summit? The ultimate mystery, right? Did they make it to the greatest mountain in the world? Did they get to the top? And then in 1953, Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzing, we know they made it because they came home. They had a photograph on the summit. They lived. But with the greatest, if it was the third highest mountain in the world, whatever. But this is the biggest mountain in the world. So now we're like out there, the great mystery. Who really summited first? And a lot of people really wanted to know. And in 1999, an expedition was put together by the BBC and PBS in the United States, and that's my entree into true, you know, being paid to be a high-altitude cinematographer. I get hired to go along, and what our goal is we want to go and try to find the body or bodies of George Mallory and Sandy Irvin. And now, look at what these guys are wearing in 1924. Wool, silk, leather boots, amazing that these guys would go into the death zone, the bitter, chillingly cold altitude and new heights, in wearing these things. They had nothing. So I get to Kathmandu, somebody hands me a piece of paper, they're like, sign this. Well, what is it? It's the body disposal form. Yeah. So if you die, we want to know how you want your body disposed of. So you could be thrown in a crevasse, you could be burned at a funeral pyre in base camp if you could get your body down there, or you could be repatriated back home to your family, which was really expensive, and I was already on the outs with my wife. I had quit my job to be on this expedition, so repatriation was out because she probably would have refused the special delivery. So I went with the funeral pyre, and I just said, oh God, please don't ever have to use this form. Now, the bodies we thought would be cool to find, but you're not really going to know if anybody summited the mountain by seeing a telltale smile on their face or anything like that frozen in. What we were really after was the Kodak vest pocket camera. We know that Mallory and Irvin actually had one of these cameras with them because Mallory actually had forgotten his, and he passed a team coming down from an unsuccessful summit bid, and he took the camera from Howard Somerville. He said, I need your camera. So our goal was to fan out across this beautiful, great north face looking where we thought we might have a good shot at finding the bodies. Now, if you look, there's the second step, kind of in the far right, and obviously the summit where the yellow line ends. The second step is a vertical dihedral that would stop anybody from getting to the top without really good rock climbing skills. 1924, it would have been pretty much almost impossible for someone actually to get over that, but getting back down even more unlikely. Now today, why do people get over it? Because there's, believe it or not, there's an aluminum ladder in it right now. And that's how people get over the second step. So an ice axe was found in 1933, 9 years after these guys disappeared, an ice axe just seated on a tiny little ledge of snow right on the ridge at 8,500 meters. Like Sandy Irvin's ice axe just sitting there, which to many people, they believe that that's where the beginning of the end started for them. So our goal was to look in that big white area where you see the red line on the bottom. That was more or less where we were looking. And the yellow line is what people use to actually summit. So nobody ever goes into the North Face unless they're dead and there are many bodies in there, or they're crazy. And we were kind of crazy, so we went in there looking. So now here we are just tagging into the death zone. It's about 8,000 meters in elevation. This is the ultimate in suffering. You lose your oxygen up there, not a lot of chance that you're going to live very long. We stop at the camp last occupied by Mallory and Irvin, the highest camp in the world. Only four summits in the world are higher than this camp. So here's Andy Politz fanning out across the North Face about where I showed you. That yellow thing in his backpack is a metal detector. And with that metal detector, we intended to search the area around where the remains of George Mallory were and hopefully gain access to underneath him, which had not been searched on May 1st. So after about an hour, we were down to the area where George Mallory had originally been discovered on May 1st, and I noticed that Andy stops and waves to me, and I immediately made my way over to where Andy was at the site of George Mallory. I was really torn. I was so overwhelmed with awe to be not only in the presence of one of the greatest mountain climbers and explorers in the world, but a human being who had died, who had three kids, who had given up everything to try to be the greatest climber, the man who made it first. And I literally walked up within about 20 feet of his body, and I just got down and I just saw it. I have no right to touch him. Like, who the hell am I? I'm just this high altitude cameraman, and I'm gonna go poke around. And I was really, really torn. And this guy here, Andy, he looks at me, he starts laughing. He goes, I knew you'd have a moral dilemma with this one. So then I started thinking, George Mallory traveled around the world doing exactly what I'm doing right now, sharing his love of adventure, his desire to push knowledge, to go to places that nobody had ever been before. And he shared it so people could catch that same bug and do it for themselves. But he also had three kids, still alive at this time, who had no idea what had happened to him. So in that moment, I thought, it would be irresponsible for me to not do everything in my power to try to find out what happened to him. So we did everything that we could to excavate the area. And the reason you don't see clothing is because 75 years of the sunlight just pounding into the clothes, when you would touch his clothes, they would just turn to dust and float away. It's just like it fell apart from the ultraviolet light over the years and years. He must have had an absolutely epic fall. One of his boots was off, but no frostbite on his toes, which is interesting. So maybe he took a really bad fall and something happened, but no frostbite on his toes. And so what we did was we kind of lifted the body up gently. And Andy said, look for the camera. And so I got on my back like a car mechanic would get under an automobile, and I shimmied under. And there, all of a sudden, there's the face of George Lee Mallory. I looked right into his face. And people say, did you know it was him? It was him. That was George Mallory. But no camera. But here's his hobnail boot. This incredible, like, I wouldn't even shovel my driveway in the winter with boots like that. And he's at 28,000 feet, 8,500 meters, maybe the summit in boots like that. His goggles, he had two pair of goggles. We found these in a pocket. Some of the clothing that was falling apart, and also a letter written to him that he had saved, and a watch that was in his pocket with no glass. Just completely clear of glass, with the hour hand frozen before the two. So maybe the watch broke right at that time he put it in his pocket. Is it possible he got to the second step and wedged his hand in the rock and broke it, put it in his pocket and went down? I mean, if you're about to die, you wouldn't care if your watch was on your wrist or not, right? So there's like, why would he put it in his pocket? So maybe he was in good shape, maybe he was going, all these clues, but we have no camera. And that's it. We never found the camera. We continued searching. We all made it back. We got down. We did this documentary. BBC and PBS co-released a similar documentary. And home we go. And then I return home to my son. And heaven, you know, God bless my mom, who couldn't take a photograph to save her life. But in this moment, she got the moment that my son, who had forgotten who I was when I got home, that moment that he recognized, pops is home. So cool. But what happens is, I'm here thinking of George Mallory. I'm looking into my son's face and looking at the face of George Mallory thinking, this guy disappeared. 1999 was filled with lessons for me. I was 37 years old at the time, which was the same age George Mallory was when he left for Mount Everest in 1924. Were we prepared as a team to find a body and know really what to do professionally? Absolutely not. I had zero training in that area. But on the other hand, the fact that six of us who went and saw the remains of George Mallory did not have, if you will, the professional background to do an exhaustive search of the area, one also must consider that the chances of Mallory having ever been found were very, very slim. Case in point, when Conrad returned in 2007 to again retrace the steps of Mallory and Irvin and endeavor to free the second step by removing the ladder and climbing it by his own means to determine if it might have been possible for Mallory and or Irvin to ascend the second second step, he returned down to the site of where Mallory was discovered in 1999, and he searched exhaustively and was unable to find Mallory. Which leads me to the obvious conclusion that, leading up to the 1999 expedition, he very well may have been covered in snow the majority of the time. So if Conrad had not ventured outside of the search area at that time, there's no telling if Mallory would have ever been found. And so whether it was the perfect search or the most imperfect search is a moot point, because without that search of 1999, it's highly unlikely that Mallory ever would have been discovered. I hope you've enjoyed this video. There will be more about the discovery of Mallory in the 1999 Mallory and Irvin research expedition in a future video. So stay tuned for that. Again, hit the subscribe button and the bell so you're notified when a new video comes out. Make sure you leave some comments in the comment thread. It's always very interesting to read your thoughts on this, and I'd love it if you jumped in there and talked about your thoughts on this story. Did they make it to the summit? How did they die? What took place in the accident? Did they take the Norton Couloir route, or did they take the ridge route? It's a great question. In 1999, there was an assumption that they took the ridge route, which to a certain extent I still believe is true. I don't doubt any possibilities, but I want to know what you think. So thanks for being here. I appreciate you taking time out of your day. Do a favor for someone. Don't ask for anything in return. Make the world a better place, one step at a time. Thanks for being here. If you're still here, please, I would love it if you checked out my Patreon page. It's patreon.com/Everest Mystery, and my YouTube channel, Everest Mystery. Check me out. And as always, leave comments and share your thoughts whenever you can, and share it with friends who might be interested in hearing or listening or watching. Thanks so much.